Blog Talk Radio.
There it is. We're waiting for this. Eggplant pocket. Well done.
People of Earth, attention. This is a voice speaking to you from thousands of miles beyond your planet.
I could come up with for a work week. All right, our space creatures may not be speaking tonight, but we got space creatures. Good evening and welcome to Eerie House, only tiny radio. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show, here along with
Dave Binkley from Weirdness Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One, which we just completed filming another episode. Woohoo!
Yep, and we're here along with ourselves for the moment. You never know who's going to show up, though. We've had some street callers. CW might pop in. You just never know. And, of course, good old Bob and Fogbane, who are in the chat, you're always welcome to join us here in our hilarious hijinks as we bring you some old-time radio programming as well.
And we've got some unique stories tonight, indeed.
Ah, yes. We're back to science fiction. Love it, especially that 50s stuff. But we also have some from a little later on, including SF-68,
yeah,
and Theater 5.
Yep. Yeah, this is the first time I think we've used SF-68 very early on when we did their version of Kaleidoscope.
But, yeah, we did. One or two with them. We've done at least one or two with them.
A Sound of Thunder. We did A Sound of Thunder with them. That's what it was. And from South Africa once again. I keep sliding in some more of those shows because they have some interesting shows going on there.
Sound of Thunder, absolutely nothing to do with the topic Dave and I were discussing before we went on. Okay, three. So the third show is X minus one. You don't want to know X minus one with a title that people say to me all the time.
Yeah.
Drop dead.
What, you mean drop dead?
Yes. And rightfully, as they should, I might add.
Yeah, that was only the girls I used to date that would tell me that. Guys didn't usually tell me that because I bought the beer, so, you know.
Yeah. Sooner or later, they would tell me to drop dead.
Yes.
My first wife meant it. She goes, like about a month before I filed, she goes, I hope you get killed in an accident on the way home. And then, this is the greatest part. When we're walking, because we filed together, I bought a kit, you know, we had almost nothing, so we just wanted the paperwork done. So we didn't even get an attorney. It cost me like $75. Not too bad for, mid-80s. And we're walking out of the courtroom when everything was finalized. She got her maiden name back with the filing of the papers, blah, blah, blah. She goes, can we still be friends? I said, you wish me dead in a car accident. I got way better friends than you. Hey, wait a minute.
Whoa.
That's sad, actually. That's not funny. But anyway.
It was a good line, though. It was a good line.
Sometimes when I'm really ticked, I got a very acerbic tongue. Or acetic? I don't know. Nasty. Sharp. Sharp tongue. That's it.
Sharp tongue. Yeah.
I have to watch that.
Yeah,
but that one was good.
X minus one tonight and an X minus one tomorrow. Another creature tomorrow on X minus one.
Yeah. And I love it. I was just waxing nostalgic recently about how much I really like 1950s humor. Well, humor too, but 1950s sci-fi. Obviously,
yes.
I love the films, you know, the early Harryhausen, the, you know, your Davy Erstedstill, Forbidden Planet, just all the classic seminal, really, movie science fiction.
Well, even some of the corny B movies out at the time were fun. You know,
it wasn't just that. The radio shows, I'm loving them. Dimension X, X minus one, and the magazines. What few I've had the good opportunity to read, you know, like the pulpish style sci-fi magazines of the period are cool too, where a lot of our radio stories actually sprang from.
Yeah. Yeah. So just, I love it. And of course, X-1 is the best science fiction anthology series out there. And you may put something out there for, you know, a couple votes for something like SF-68, which was science fiction in 1968. But consistent, these stories consistently were absolutely well-written, well-acted, and the sound effects and whatever they did for it, it just, to me, this is this is what you would, if you were doing an anthology sci-fi show, this is the one you'd want to try to achieve to be like.
Absolutely. A wide range of tales, whether not all of them took place in space or dealt with aliens, but a great many of them did.
Yeah.
A lot of them dealt with time travel, which we've covered here before.
Or robots. Robots.
Robots. Depending on which movie you watched.
Yes. Like, yes.
They used to say mutant. What is a mutant? It's a mutant. Mutant.
It probably got there to the studio the day. Say, how do you say this word?
You know, CW was here. She would probably know exactly what movies I'm referencing with these, what we now think of as mispronunciations.
Oh, she would. Absolutely.
She's sharp. She is sharp. Where will we start tonight? We've got one with a kind of a serious title, Drop Dead, and we've got one that's thought provoking.
I think the goat was saying there's a particular one he'd like to start with.
The one with the funny name?
Yes.
All right, funny to me at least. Okay, then that means we're starting with SF-68.
Yes. Let me find it. Here it is. Okay. I do have a date for that. Yeah, back to SF-68, again, for science fiction 68. The guy that was doing The Creaking Door finished that series, and this was his next series that he created and produced was SF-68. That's about all that I kind of have on that particular series.
That's okay. This one's got a fun title, Space Cow. Hence one of the pictures I put in the slideshow.
I thought that was hilarious.
I try to be subtle, and yet, you know, hey, see if anybody notices, all right? but sometimes I'm my own spoiler, too. So there you go, Space Cow from SF-68. Do we have an original broadcast date, or are these kind of
we do. There's a lot of South African ones that don't. This one does. This was appears to be episode number 15, and it is from looks like August 16th of 1968.
Sort of greenish liquid, the kind of valve ahead, opening and closing spasmodically.
Can you get through, Belter?
I'd hate to take the chance. If it closed again, it'd crush the oxygen lines. Wait, I'll try my hypodermic.
What's going on?
The valve's opening. It's closing. Opening. Slowing down. Closing. Opening. Stayed open. I'm going through.
Biotech, the new soak and pre-wash powder, brings you SF-68,
stories which plunge vividly into other worlds, other dimensions, other times. SF-68.
On your furniture with Pledge. You simply spray it on and wipe. Pledge waxes and polishes instantly as you dust. There's no rubbing required. Give new life to tired-looking furniture with Pledge. Look for the push-button aerosol can. Pledge, now only 59 cents.
I feel great. You are my sunshine, my...
A moment ago, you had a sticking headache.
That was before I took a Grandpa headache powder.
Grandpa headache powders kill pain, soothe strained nerves, and lift depression. Grandpa headache powders work quickly because their famous triple action formula dissolves almost immediately. Get the quickest relief of any pain, all pain. Get Grandpa headache powders.
Ah, Grandpa.
Adapted for radio by Michael McKay. The Space Cow.
Mater. Turn off the light. Mater. It's blown. Oh, Maida.
Oh, no. Oh, wait, the children.
It's too late. It's old Bender calling about his constipation again. I'll feed him dynamite pills. Yeah, who is it?
Dr. Melton, you'd better get over here right away.
What is it, Tom? Where am I supposed to get?
Over to the spaceport. Ship out of control. Almost ran into Phobos coming down. Landed with a crash. They need you at once.
I'm coming.
The other two will be awaiting me.
Sorry. It's an emergency out of the spaceport. Grab my stuff, darling, will you? Ship's crashed. They must need doctors badly to call an unknown like me.
Oh, don't start that again, Larry. Life passed you by. You with a brain that size and you're only a country doctor. I know.
Go and see to the baby. You'll hear it over the spaceport in a minute. Antibiotics needed, adjustable bandages. There's no way of knowing how many have been hurt. I'd better be ready to treat the whole crew. Maida, where's my blasted shoes? Riding over in the bike car. I thought the crash was serious.
The crash was nothing, Doctor. Linton here was excited by our near miss on Phobos. But we've no time for that now. I understand, Dr. Meltzer, that you're a first-class vet.
What? Look, I hope you didn't drag me out of bed to treat a sick dog. I'm not very sentimental about ship's pets, I
agree. Larry, no pets. Well, come along, I'll show you. The ship's across the field. It's one of the big ones. We'll have to be quick. Through here, Doctor. The crew are out, a few burns, one broken arm, nothing to worry about. This is what we're worried about.
What the devil? What is it? What's that in there?
For the lack of a better name, we call it a space car. Actually, it doesn't inhabit free space. We picked it up on canny need, as a matter of fact. As you can see, it doesn't really resemble a car at all.
I've never seen it. Must be nearly 400 feet.
Nearer 300, actually. About a third of the length of the ship.
Well, is that supposed to be my patient?
That's it, Doctor.
I haven't the slightest idea what the thing's like. How am I supposed to know what's wrong with it? How can I treat it? I've never seen one.
Wait a minute, before you blow up. The thing's sick. It isn't eating. It hardly moves. It's been getting worse from the time we left Canymede.
Looks like a perishing dragon. Mouth all of 30 feet wide. Doctor...
We meant to land at Marsopolis and have it treated there. But we overshot the place and something went wrong with our drive. We had to come down here.
But haven't they any doctors to spare from town?
And they're no better than you are. And they don't meet the kind of emergencies you do either. That goes for me, too. I'm strictly a curer of Homo sapiens.
Well, what makes you think that I...
We've radioed Earth. We're hoping to get some information soon. Some of their zoo directors... And...
Look, I tell you, I don't know anything about that overgrown hunk of protein, Musgrave.
This should suffice. I gather we'll have to begin almost at once. Pickering reckons the thing's in a bad way.
What? What's that you've got there, Tom?
A suit for you to wear. You're going down into that animal.
Into that mass of flesh. All right, blazes, I am.
Look, Doctor, it's necessary.
There's plenty we can learn without going down into it.
We want to keep this beast alive for scientific purposes, as well as possible value as a food animal.
With the tests we can make. Plenty of... Well,
Yes, of course. You can take the thing's temperature. But what would that figure mean? What is normal temperature for a space cow? What's the normal blood pressure? Always supposing the wretched thing has blood. What's the normal heartbeat? Has it got blood? Doctor, please.
Yeah, but if I go down in that diver suit, the thing's digestive juices might melt the oxygen lines. Blast it, they might dissolve the suit.
The lines on the suit have been tested. They can stand at least half an hour. If they begin to go, you radio up and we pull you out.
I'll help you with the suit, Larry.
Yes, but I... How do I get in anyway? Knock. Mouth looks at least 40 feet off the ground.
They've constructed a ramp around the other side of the ship. You get up to its mouth around there. No trouble. We've got the low gravity of Mars to thank for that.
This suit was made for a dwarf. Look, what about getting the mouth open? I mean, it's shut. Am I expected to prize it open myself? Look, Doctor, I don't...
We're going to poke the creature with an electric prod. We've tried already. Its mouth opens when we do that.
Oh. Good. I'm glad.
Let's get round to the other side. Come with us, Linton. We'll need your help.
Down the throat. Slimy. Sort of slippery passage. Makes a turn to one side.
We have got the lines on you, all right? You're okay?
Suppose the jaws constrict, Look, tell the captain I'm fine with dogs and cats.
Okay, we are letting you down. You can tell us when you reach the floor of its stomach. Here goes. In you go.
Martian hillside. The gullet goes for miles.
must be the beginning of the digestive tract. Beans are all right. It's good light.
Dr. Meltzer, are you safe?
Fine, Todd, fine. Having a wonderful time. Wish you were here.
What's it like in there?
I'm standing in a sort of a pool of greenish liquid. It's fascinating, but I'm not greatly instructed. I've got sample bottles. I'll fill them in various places. You can analyze it later.
Lines all right, Larry?
Fine. Walls about 20 feet apart here. There's no sign of macroscopic flora or fauna. Hold it. There's a big reddish bump in the wall about 3 feet across. Might be a tumor. I'll just slice some tissue from it. There are several of these bumps. There's a valve ahead. It's opening and closing spasmodically.
Can you get through, Meltzer?
I'd hate to take the chance. If it closed again, it would crush the oxygen lines. Wait, I'll try my hypodermic.
What's going on?
I've given it a shot. Rhythm's about 2 seconds. Valve's opening. It's closing. Opening. Slowing down. Closing. Opening. Yes. Yes. It stayed open. I'm going through. Hold it. There's something alive down here. Very much alive.
There's a gun in the suit. Use it if necessary.
Gun? That would be cruel. How'd you like to have someone shooting up guns inside you? No, I'll use the hypodermic. It's like an overgrown tadpole. 2.5 feet long. Might be a parasite or something that lives in symbiosis with it. It's veered away from me now. Sort of swims in the fluid down here.
Larry? Larry, are you all right?
Maida, what are you doing here?
I waited, and then I phoned. They told me. The maid's come over to be with the children. There are lots of ships going by overhead. I wonder...
Ships?
The news services, Doctor. The case has aroused great interest. Don't be surprised if you find yourself famous when you come up.
Never mind that. Have you heard from Earth yet?
No. We heard from the curator of Marsopolis Zoo, though. He's never heard of a space cow and has no suggestions to make.
That's great. Thank him for me. Any photographers or newsmen out there?
Half a dozen.
Fine. Send them down. Take a few pictures.
I don't think they can go down for a while yet, Doctor. Perhaps later.
Oh, why not? I'd like some company down here. And if the beast's mouth's open, surely it'd be a simple matter to... The mouth is open, isn't it?
Don't get upset, Meltzer. You see...
You mean it closed again?
Yes.
Whoa! That's some kind of cow there they got in space.
Yeah. I have a question and an answer to that question, Dale.
Yes?
The question is, how do you milk a space cow? And the answer is, I guess, from the inside. There you go.
Ew. Creepy when comparing to an Earth cow. Yuck.
But it's just as nutritious, I'm sure.
Yep. If homogenized.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah.
But if it isn't homogenized, you can keep it outside the refrigerator, right?
Yes. Not too long.
What's the matter? You don't
George,
like cottage cheese? You don't like cottage cheese? Is that what you're saying?
No, I do not.
Oh,
the
really?
Look of
oh,
it,
I like cottage cheese.
Yeah, even the look of it makes my stomach blench. Ugh. I'm not a cottage cheese guy.
I am. I like cottage cheese. That's why I leave my milk out.
Nor that feet cheese or whatever it is.
The what?
The feet cheese.
Feet cheese. I don't think I'm a fan of feet cheese, no. I don't think I'm a fan of
it. No, it doesn't sound pleasant.
An interesting tale going on here. Sadly, just this week I found a better copy, I think in the 1980s, I think, they came up with, South Africa came up with a new suspense series. And I've been sharing those with my volunteer from South Africa. And they had this same episode. It was a little cleaner, but it was a little late to switch everything out. So,
well, you know what? In about, I estimate 11.6 years when we start repeats.
Well, but it would be a different presentation, so it wouldn't be exactly the same show. And they have different...
We've never pulled that stunt before. Halloween.
Never, except on October 30th.
Yes, twice on Sundays. Yes.
No, and it is interesting to see sometimes how different people present the different stories. Like, we use the Sound of Thunder from SF-68, and we have not used one from Bradbury 13, but the Bradbury 13 was an amazing one. There, Bradbury 13's kaleidoscope was far outweighed the one that Dimension X did also. So, you know, it's interesting to see how other people present the same story. I know that.
Well, and if there's a time spread in between them, there are sometimes technological advances too.
Right. Right. In that case, but even in the 1950s, that one, The Outer Limit, where the guy has 10 minutes of fuel and shows back up 6 hours later, even Escape did a version of that, but their version was different because they seemed to spend more time under hypnosis than the other place. So you get a bigger feel. So, but I love the way that X-1 wrapped it up. I thought it was a much better ending, but I thought it was very interesting. So the same story sometimes gets a little different twist.
Yes.
On the different show. So,
yep.
So it is interesting to hear the different versions.
Absolutely. I don't think you should, it's cool to have your favorites, but it's always fun to look at another adaptation and say, okay, I see where they're coming from.
Yeah. Like I like your favorite, the one about the rats on the island and the lighthouse. Three Skeleton Key. You love the one with Vincent Price that he did. I think he did that on Suspense, I think.
Yeah.
Now, the one on Escape with William Conrad, to me, just with the other, William Conrad did the Vincent Price role in that. But it was the guy that played the crazy guy was so much better on the Escape version of Three Skeleton Key. He was. And to be honest with you, to me, he sounded like Burgess Meredith, which made it even better, you know?
Oh, yeah.
But we can all have our favorites. And we'll share that other version at some point because I really do like that version as well. Even in Escape, there's two times they did, at least two times they did Lineage versus the Ants, and one of them is so superior to the other one, and that's the one that didn't even include William Conrad, which it did in the, the one that we played, I think. And,
yeah.
And he, William Conrad even kind of did a movie version of that as well. I have seen that. So that was, you know, it is neat to see the different ways that different producers and directors envision a story.
Yes. And the way the actors interpreted it as well, I think.
Exactly.
A piece exactly. of it. Yep. All right. Well, let's wrap up our wonderful story from SF-68 and see how they milk this thing, this space cow.
I'll get the grill going, Dale.
All right. Boy, that'll make a lot of steak, that big space cow there.
In this series of programs, ladies, it's our intention to talk to you about biotech and promote it to you for the laundry. Now, we've made claims that biotech will get rid of the stubbornest stains just by soaking. I dare say, like others, you feel a bit skeptical about these claims. And so we've been collecting letters from ladies who use biotech just to quote to you from time to time in order to authenticate our advertisement. And a business hotel from Beachford, Sea Point in the Cape, wrote and said that biotech is a very welcome product for the household. Biotech has a unique quality that it does what it claims to do. Mrs. Duff finished by saying, I have proved your claims about biotech and am delighted with the results. And then a Mrs. Rita Stewart of Hunt, Stratum Avenue, Littleton, Transvaal, said, we have tried your biotech for all our children's clothes and also white underclothing, and we're absolutely amazed at the change in their appearance. And I can assure you, said Mrs. Stewart, that I will be a regular user of biotech. So buy biotech for yourself and your laundry.
Why? How did it close?
The creature must have adapted itself to the effects of the shock. We thought of sending down a photographer, but when we tried to get the mouth open for him, we couldn't. We still can't. But don't worry. We'll find a way of getting you out.
But the oxygen...
The lines are strong and the mouth isn't closed tight enough to pinch them. You can still breathe, all right, can't you?
Well, now that I think of it, I can. Thanks for telling me. I feel like Jonah in his whale. Now, what happens if my suit starts to dissolve?
We'll pull you out. We'll think of something to get the mouth open. Just don't get caught behind that valve.
Thanks for the advice. I don't know what I'd do without it, Doctor. Oh, what the blazes can be wrong with this great lump of... Oh, more of the tadpole things. Maybe they're the cause of the thing's trouble. They're parasites, and they're making it sick. On the other hand, it might just as well be that they're necessary to this creature's health. Down here in a world I know nothing about, everything is just a shot in the dark. I'm pressing on. The passage, or whatever it is narrowing slightly. A blind alley. Can't go any further.
Everything all right, Larry?
Beautiful. Had a most interesting tour. Have you got this thing's mouth open yet?
We're still working on it.
Well, use anything. For pity's sake, get it open. I'm coming back. I can't find anything apart from the lump back in the stomach and the tadpole things. Both could be the cause of the thing's poor health. But who can tell?
Larry, are you all right?
Yes, I'm fine.
Hundreds of people out here. They're sending pictures everywhere to Earth. They want you on television and everything. And you said this morning about being only a country doctor. You're going to be famous now. They say this is the only animal of its kind ever discovered. And of course, you're the only person who ever went down inside one.
And I'll probably be the only person who ever got eaten by one, too.
Larry.
No, it's all right, all right. Ask Dr. Musgrave to speak, will you? See you in a little while, darling. How are they getting on with the mouth business?
Larry, there's a big machine thing.
We'll have the mouth open soon. Don't worry. Where are you now?
I'm coming up to the valve again. There's a whole shoal of these tadpole things.
They're not attacking you, are they?
Not yet. I feel fine. Just a bit short of breath. A bit hungry, too. I wonder what this thing would taste like raw. Good grief.
What's the matter?
The valve I paralyzed, it's working again.
Opening and closing?
Yes. And every time it closes, it squeezes the fuel. That's why I feel short of breath. I've got to get out of here.
Have you got enough drug left to paralyze the valve again?
No. No, keep quiet a minute. Let me think. The rhythm's 2 seconds. About. Could die through, but no way to take off from. All too slippery. And if I misjudged it, I'd get caught when the valve closed again. My plates are getting clogged up. I'm sweating and I can't even wipe it away. Sink, Meltzer, sink. The tadpoles. They're coming. Get out of it. Get away. And
Meltzer, doctor, what's the matter?
I'm all right. I thought these little tadpole efforts were going to attack, that's all. Well,
what? You all right?
I'm alive. Listen, I'm going to try and get through the valve. One of the tadpoles did it, and the valve opened a lot wider to let it through. It just sort of whizzed up and over and through.
How do you plan to get through this?
I'll grab one of the things by the tail and go through with it. They won't let the soap be caught. I'll have to jump through after one of them. Stand by.
Careful, Doctor.
Careful. Careful. Now, here goes. Here comes one now. Swimming. Up. I'm falling, Musgrave. The pipe. The valve caught the pipe. I can't breathe.
Meltzer, doctor, what's happening? Are you all right? Meltzer, can you hear me? Doctor.
I'm still alive. The pipe was caught. I couldn't get it. I'm okay now. Not a tumor thing. It's throbbing. Well, I may as well slice into it, see what I can find.
Come on up now, Doctor. Please, up now.
Yes. Yes, yes. Incision here. Ruth! One of the tadpole things. So that's where they came from. Out of the tumors. There it goes. Back into the deeper stomach. Back through the valve. Doctor, what's happening? Well, stop giving me a beating in here. Try another electric shock. Just wait till I get near the upper part of the gullet. My light's getting dim. The oxygen lines don't look the same as they did. Not so clear. I think they're weakening, Musgrave. Oh, it's getting slippery. Doctor, I'm climbing the throat now.
Shall we try the sharp electric shock?
Go ahead. Leak. Oxygen's leaking. Not much time. The green liquid I've been wading through, it'll contain hormones, enzymes, antibiotics, biological chemicals of all kinds. Stuff some of the tissues will be adapted to and some not. Those that haven't adapted would react violently if I injected this animal's throat lining with a hypo full of the stuff. Doctor, hold on. I'm going to try something. Now, just wait. Nice and full. Green muck. Now, to stuff it in the throat wall. You cause this creature to cough or sneeze or something. Or to make it...
You talk came out too.
How did you manage to...
Never mind that. How's the patient?
What? Doing fine, as a matter of fact. Seems somehow to have recovered.
Darling, thank you.
How many of the tadpoles came out with me?
About six. We're keeping them in the same low oxygen atmosphere. We've decided that if they are parasites...
They're not then... parasites. They're the young.
What?
The young. You take care of them, they'll eventually grow as big as the mother monster. Your space cow wasn't ill. It was merely gravid.
Gravid?
Gravid?
Pregnant. Having babies. With children. Or in this case, with space cowlet.
I know what it means. But that was the digestive tract you were down.
So? All animals aren't born the same way, are they?
You did a good job. Look, would you like to take care of this beast permanently?
To go down inside that monster again? Oh, no, thanks. From now on, I treat nothing but small monsters. Sheep, cows, and human beings. Who let these animals in? They're worse than the ones I met down in the space cows inside.
Be nice to them, dear. They're turning you into a great man.
Come over there.
Before you go, I want to say, ladies, a little bit more about Biotex, the amazing new washing product now on the market. You've heard what people all over the country are saying about Biotex. They're saying it is different to any washing product they've ever used before. With amazing new Biotex, the stubbornest stains will vanish. Yes, vanish. Clean away. Just by soaking your laundry overnight in cold water, or for an hour or two in warm water, or... by pre-washing it quickly in your washing machine. So, get amazing new Biotex today.
Clean, clean, everything soon will be clean, clean, for all the world to see. Soak, soak, stain away easily when you use new Biotex.
You have just been
listening to The Space Cow, which was based upon William Morrison's Country Doctor. The program was brought to you by Biotex, the new soak and pre-wash powder.
Listen again next Friday night at 9:30 to SF-68.
I'm a doctor, Jim. I'm a farmer. Damn it, Jim.
Yeah, country doctor. Okay.
Yeah,
yep, this is a crawling, shy dish cow here and see what's wrong with her.
Yep. All right, you want to get this one or do I?
I it doesn't matter, I've got it rolled up if you don't.
I am ready if you aren't, or vice versa.
Okay.
Take it away, cowman. Eerie House Radio disappointingly presents... a garrulous moral of the story.
Garless, but yet from Gar. There's getting into your work, and then there's getting into your work.
Eeny, meeny, chili beanie, the spirits are about to speak.
There you go. That was a Garless Gar's Moral. Written by Gar.
Yes, a Garless Gar's Moral, yep.
That's how much he cares about you listeners, see? Foggs.
That's right.
Bob, anybody else that's listening, Gar's thinking about you.
Yep.
He set us up.
Yeah, he's been hit with migraine all week, and yet here he is doing this hard work preparing for you guys.
Which is our way of saying if it's not funny, it's not our fault. So,
no, it's not funny. We did it.
Yeah. It lacks that Gar. But we feel obligated to bring them to you because Gar went through the effort of putting them together.
That's right.
For the show tonight. So we send the space cow out to pasture. How about a little Theater 5? We can end with a bang with X-1, huh?
Yes, Theater 5, because there'll be other creature coming in from pasture on Drop Dead. So, yeah, let's hit Theater 5. Good old, from mid-1960s, ABC's, they're grasped at trying to get a touch and a taste of old-time radio. They were on for a little over a year, but, you know, at five nights a week, it didn't take long to add up a lot of episodes that they have. And they had a little of everything. Much like Mystery Theater, they had some comedy, they had some drama, they had some sci-fi, a little bit of horror in there, a little bit of everything. And they didn't quite pull it off as successfully as Hyman Brown did about 10 years later, maybe 11 years later, when he came in with the CBS Radio Mystery Theater. This, Dale, is what I would call, you know, because you have called the 70s. The Silver Age of Radio, and I agree with you. There was a lot of good radio that, as it was dying out in the 50s and died out mostly in the 60s, in the 70s there was a rebirth between bringing in shows like Arch Obler's Lights Out, which he had to retitle because he didn't own the title Lights Out, but he owned the stories, The Devil and Mr. Rowe, and a lot of other shows that were re-syndicated in the 70s. This in the mid-60s really was the kickoff, I believe, of your Silver Age of radio.
Well, I think I coined that term because I equated it to comics, which if you put them on a timeline, kind of almost matches old-time radio. You had your golden age of comics, the pre-World War II and World War II comics, maybe even into the 50s when you started getting into EC and other things, and the Silver Age, I think, was ushered in primarily by Stan Lee, but also from the competition that Marvel got from DC right around in the 60s. Well, radio did the same thing. Your golden age is from the dawn of radio programming until the 50s, and then it died out in the early 60s as we knew it, and then there's these rebirth series or latecomers like South African shows.
Yeah.
They were late to get TV, so what else are you going to do? Got to have radio.
Yep, that's true. But, and that's where you get this SF-68. And right now, like I said, I think in the 80s is when they had their most recent suspense series. They had one, again, I think in the 60s, but or early 70s, but they brought this one that sounds like it's more from the 80s, and interesting commercials they have with those as well. We'll get some of these lined in as well.
So glad you leave those in, Dave, because I think that enhances the show. I think it takes us back a little bit to the products and the way they presented them back then. So,
And in Mystery Theaters, it's the stuff that we grew up with, that you and I grew up with. And we remember these commercials.
Yeah.
Or just have fun learning about them all over again.
Yeah. And nice title on this one, too. Kind of a description of the world of politics. In absence of all intelligent life.
Yes. That's where we are today, I think. Right?
Yes. Yes. Look around.
That way.
Look around. That's why we do this stuff. It's fun all the time. Do we got a broadcast date for this, Jim, from Theater 5?
Yes, we do. The broadcast date is, looks like July 26th of 1965.
Theater 5 presents In Absence of All Intelligent Life.
Jeffries, you make history. One of the first men to set foot on an inhabitable planet. And the next thing I know, my eyes are popped open and I'm just staring up into the darkness.
So you came up here to have another look at it?
How did you know?
I'm afraid buck fever isn't restricted to the young.
Ah, but it's beautiful, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Look at how it hangs there in space, motionless like a huge ball or a giant pearl. Luminescent and gray-green, rich against the blackness of space, and the light of the stars beyond. Red and green and yellow against the black.
Look, here on the radar. The land masses show up quite clearly now through the cloud layer.
Oh. Well, it's mostly water.
Well, more than three-quarters of X-37J's surface is covered with water.
Yes, I keep forgetting. You think the land will be firm enough to sit down on?
As dry as the land at home.
No, you'd think with all that water, it'd all be spongy. Catch hut!
Addie!
Dr. Siddons, I was just going to send for you.
What's up?
I don't know. We just got a report from the con that there's a blanket of pure metal satellites orbiting this planet. From the size of a house to the size of needles.
Pure metal?
Well, they could be manufactured.
Here, let's see. Yes, I see. They are pure metal. Have we hit any yet?
We're in the field now.
The ship's okay?
Our hull's designed to withstand 300 bombardments per second. What do you make of it?
I don't know. It's very unusual for this large a concentration of satellites to be in the magnetic field of a planet.
You mean somebody could have put it there?
Well, I didn't say that.
But it is possible that these satellites were put there to act as a barrier to incoming rocket ships.
Yes, it is possible. But remember, meteorites are frequently pure metal, and they become satellites.
There's probably life there.
Not necessarily. Of course, we know this planet is capable of supporting life. Well, that's why we're going to explore it. But to jump to the conclusion that it's intelligent life and hostile to our exploration, well, it's not only unscientific, it's completely unfounded at this point. It may be that the belt of satellites around this planet might be due to natural, entirely natural causes, ones we hadn't anticipated. But to say there are people down there such as ourselves is something we can't possibly know until we've landed.
Well, I'm going to sensitize the ship's defense system and post orders for the landing party to carry weapons.
A wise precaution.
In the meantime, it's 5 hours till touchdown. I suggest you gentlemen get some sleep while you can. I have a feeling you're going to need it once we land.
$150,000 from touchdown. Rate of fall.
0-6-6-0.
So far, so good.
145 from touchdown. Rate of fall, 0.
If they had any anti-rocket devices, they would have sent them up by now. We're well into their atmosphere.
Yes, unless they're planning some sort of trap, letting us land so they can capture us intact once we're on the ground.
If anybody's down there. We've been monitoring the radio frequency since last night. There hasn't been a sound. Whatever life is down there, I'm sure we'll be able to handle.
110,000 feet from touchdown. Rate of fall.
I see you're keeping to the edge of the landmass.
Yes, I want you to be able to get your ocean samples without a lot of traveling.
May I suggest you set down where that large river empties into the sea? That way I can take freshwater samples as well. See, there on that peninsula.
You think it's big enough?
Why, make it out to be about 2 miles wide. Plenty of room for us.
Jeffries, what's the spectrographic reading for that peninsula?
A solid mineral. Granite-like composition.
Oh, that should support us.
Well, it's not a peninsula, sir. It's an island. See here how the river cuts around it at the north end, cutting it off from the main body of land?
Well, that makes it all the better. And it's small enough, surrounded by water on four sides, makes it easier to defend if there are hostiles down there.
100,000 feet from touchdown. Rate of fall, 0790.
Collins, alter the course for that island.
Aye, aye, sir. Dr. Siddons, there's something funny about that island. Look here on the spectrograph.
Oh, what is it?
Look. Now, the whole thing shows up gray, solid mineral, except for this square patch of green. The only spot on the whole island.
Nothing unusual about that. See, the green is gray underneath, merely indicating vegetation covering the minerals, grass or trees.
Well, yes, but why this one spot and why so perfectly oblong? Look, the sides and corners are laid out sharp as a parade ground.
He's right, you know. Nature couldn't lay out anything as geometric as that. It has to have been made by intelligent beings.
You suppose it's some sort of sacred ground, a place for religious ceremony?
Let's not let superstition run away with our better judgment.
Well, yes, but look, Dr. Siddons, the whole island's cross-hatched into squares. That green patch is the only unmarked place on it.
You're right. The island has been scored with lines following some sort of plan, like streets. See how they extend on the other side of the rivers. Perhaps this isn't the best place to land, Captain.
80,000 feet from touchdown. Rate of fall, 0790.
We're too far down to blast up again. I can't waste the fuel.
Captain, the radar altimeter is giving me a hodgepodge of readings for that island. The only level place is that green patch of ground.
Maybe we should try to land on either side of the river, on the mainland.
That's just as bad. Nothing level over there either.
Whatever that patch of ground is, sacred ground or what? We're going to be in the middle of it. Set your sights to the middle of that green, Collins. Man your stations, men. We're taking her in. Well, gentlemen, we made it.
The new world.
Keep your eyes open. See any movement?
No.
It looks like we've landed in the middle of a huge religious grounds.
We're ringed completely by... What are they, Dr. Siddons? Monuments?
No, they're too big for that. I imagine they're buildings of some sort. See all those little windows cut in them? They must be dwelling places.
Then there's no question that there are creatures on this planet.
No.
Then where is everybody?
That's a good question.
Well, they could have been scared away by the roar of our landing rockets.
Maybe they evacuated this place when they saw us coming and they're waiting for us to get on the ground so they can attack us with whatever weapons they use.
What are you going to do?
The only thing we can do. Suit up and go outside. It's obvious they aren't coming to meet us, so we'll have to go out and see if we can make contact. Everybody be suited up and ready to leave the ship by 0800. Everyone carries a signed weapon.
side weapon. I'm going to have a main weapon, a side weapon, a back weapon.
They only gave me a carrot stick.
Yeah.
That's all they gave me.
Oh, man, a carrot stick. Ugh. Probably an old one.
Good thing I have my 10-foot pole with me.
Two carrots, strength to onions. That's what I say.
That's true. Oh, what a great classic. That's one I'll just never forget. I had not really heard that story before we aired that, and it is such a wonderful story.
Yep. Fond memories of Erie House Radio. You can have them, too. Just go in the archive and quit your job, because you're going to have to if you want to catch up now.
Yeah, we'll see you in about 4 weeks, and then you'll be another 4 weeks behind.
There you go. That's right. God, it's so great. Some of you have been with us from the very start. God, so great. Good story here. Building up the tension.
Yep, yep. I tell you, Gar's favorite line in here, when we at the end of this, after his moral, I tell you what his, because we talked the other night. Maybe it was last night. We might talk last night for a little while. But yeah, it was a very interesting show. I was not real fond at first because I was not used to taking a, you know, a half hour show was only like 22 minutes anyway to begin with. Well,
right.
To start off at 25 takes you down to 20, you know, because of commercial time. Mm-hmm. So this is a tad shorter,
but still a great tale. They got it all in there.
Yep, yep.
So let's wrap up. In the absence of all intelligent life from Theater 5.
Deck now, Collins, and spreading out in a defensive perimeter. You're in charge of the ship.
Aye, aye, sir.
No one is allowed to re-enter the ship without the proper password, no matter what the circumstances. And if for any reason you think things have gone wrong, blast off and make your report to home. You understand that?
Aye, aye, sir.
Very good. Have you made your readings, Doctor?
Yes, sir. It's just as we predicted from home, though the ground radiation level is a little bit higher than we anticipated. Here, you can see for yourself.
Dangerous?
More than safe for us. There's no reason why we can't get out of these suits and walk around the same as at home.
Unless there's the presence of some element or gas that we can't detect.
Yes, that's true.
I need a volunteer.
Captain, I'd like to volunteer.
Not you, Dr. Siddons. You're too valuable to the expedition. I can't let you do that.
Well, there's no danger.
You said yourself that
please,
this...
Captain, you were the first person to set foot on this new world. I'd like to be the first one to breathe its air.
Well, all right. But be careful.
Come on in, boys. The water's fine.
I hear that, Collins? We got it made. Boy, oh boy.
I hear you, Lieutenant.
All right, knock it off. This is a military reconnaissance, not a picnic. There's life on this planet, but until we make contact with it, it's the enemy. Lieutenant Jeffries?
Yes, sir.
You take the doctor and the two men and reconnoiter to the east as far as the river. I'll go as far as the river to the west. When you get through, double back here and report.
Aye, aye, sir.
You see anything, Doc?
No.
They've been lying here so long, staring at those empty openings so long.
Windows.
All right, windows you call them. I feel like there's a million pairs of eyes staring back at us. What do you suppose they look like?
Who?
The creatures we're after.
Haven't any idea.
Oh, it's weird hunting for a creature you don't know what they might look like.
Yeah.
Well, we could lie here forever.
Such crude dwellings. They must have lived one on top of the other.
Yeah, if we're ever going to see them, we're going to have to dig them out. Any volunteers to go with me?
I'll go.
All right, the rest of you stay here. Now keep us covered. If anything happens, don't be afraid to shoot into us.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Doc, when I give the word, we'll run across this street and don't stop until we come to the wall of the first building, right?
Right.
Are you ready?
Okay.
Then now! So far, so good.
Now, over there.
Right.
Just above your head, there's one of their windows. But it's filled with plastic.
See if I can break it.
Again, shattered plastic.
I can try.
Boy, it's nothing but glass. Old-fashioned glass.
Yeah. Hello in there. Anybody home?
Move along the wall. There's a kind of doorway up ahead, I think.
Hmm. It's unlocked.
Push it open with your weapon. Be careful.
Yeah. Hello? Anybody home? Okay, Doc. Let's move in cautiously, but keep your eyes open.
There's one. Where? Over there.
Cop! Cop!
It's an effigy of some sort. See, it isn't living. It's a statue of some kind. You see, it's made out of some sort of alloy.
You sure?
Yes.
Suppose that's what they look like?
Well, I imagine so. Animals aren't given to making statues of themselves.
Boy, what ugly-looking creatures. You suppose that's the head?
Yes. You see, these must be the arms, and these are clearly the legs.
Look how close together the eyes are and the stick-like legs. I almost hope we don't run into one.
I don't think we will.
What do you mean by that?
Not in this city, at least. Look at the gray dust on the floor. It's almost 2 inches thick. I noticed the same in the street. If there are any of these monstrosities left, they aren't here. This city hasn't been used for a long, long time. Maybe 1,000 years.
Lieutenant Jeffries reporting, sir.
Go ahead, Lieutenant.
We've completed the island reconnaissance, sir, as per your instructions.
And you found?
Nothing. No life of any sort.
Not a thing?
Uh-uh. Just miles and miles of twisted, stunted vegetation and a couple more of those huge radioactive burns, same kind we found 100 miles south and west of here.
Carland, your receivers picked up anything yet?
No, sir. We've been monitoring all frequencies since we've been here and not a sound. Nothing but random radio interference from outer space.
What about the television satellites we sent up?
They've covered the surface of this planet 100 times, sir, and not a sign of movement anywhere.
Well, Dr. Siddons, what do you make of it?
It might be unethical for me to venture an opinion at this time.
Oh, come on now, Doctor. You must have some idea. You've been poking around these ruins for the last 10 days. You must have drawn some conclusion.
Well, as you know, this planet was at one time inhabited by living creatures, much like ourselves, no matter how repulsive they may appear to us. They were biped, carnivorous, possessed a certain amount of intelligence.
Well, what happened to them?
Well, in order to understand what happened to them, you have to understand the creatures themselves. As I've said, they were very
primitive and very superstitious. True, they had advanced from the Stone Age to the threshold of nuclear energy, but culturally and morally, well, they hadn't got much beyond the Iron Age.
So then they discovered the tremendous power of nuclear energy.
Exactly. The very first use they made of it was to blow a few million of their fellow creatures off the face of the planet.
Savages.
Yeah, but they didn't destroy everything. The city's still standing.
Well, as far as I can figure out, it didn't hold any military targets.
Well, but what happened to the creatures in it?
They were killed off by radiation fallout.
Well, it's still radioactive. Why didn't the radiation kill us off?
Well, for one thing, it's cooled off considerably since then. And for another thing, we're used to it. They never had a chance.
Well, that's it. We've got enough to make a report when we get back. Secure for blast-off at 1800 hours tonight. Got everything tied down and ready. That's all, gentlemen.
Doctor, you were able to crack their language, weren't you?
I wasn't able to. My computers were. It was a relatively simple task.
Well, what if they call this place?
You mean the planet? The civilization?
No. I mean this island, this city or whatever it was.
Well, of course, it was a proper name, so it was meaningless to us. But I can reproduce the sounds they made as they spoke them. They called this place New York.
Five has presented In Absence of All Intelligent Life, written by George Bamber, directed by Warren Somerville. In the cast, William Redfield, Cliff Carpenter, Guy Sorrell, and Peter Rattray. Script editor, Jack C. Wilson. Original music by Alexander Vlastotsenko. Orchestra under the direction of Glenn Osser. Executive producer for Theater 5, Mr. Lee Bowman. We invite your comments. Write to Theater 5, New York 23, New York. That's Theater 5, New York 23, New York. Fred Foy speaking. This has been an ABC Radio Network production.
Wonder if he was one of the seven little Foys.
He wasn't. Hey, and you know, in reference to your Charlton Heston moment, this was about 3 years before Planet of the Apes. So, yeah.
I mean, it was that kind of a stunning, eye-opening. I felt it coming, to be honest with you. I felt that sort of coming.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, this predates the exciting finish of, startling finish back then. Finish to Planet of the Apes.
Yep. And it's your turn to mess up Gar's wonderful moral.
Absolutely. Here goes nothing. And I mean nothing. Eerie House Radio sadly presents the Garless Moral of the Story, written by Gar. There are 14 locations in the world called New York. And when I checked 10 minutes ago, there was 13 of them. I guess one went down the drain. I don't know.
Ooh. There we go.
Dave is playing that with a hollow reed. He's actually performing that live just for you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He spent hours whittling that thing.
Yep, man. I only have about 8 cuts on my finger to prove it.
Oh, and yes, Beast Creatures. There's been so many in films. It's funny how they change in appearance. And some of them can morph into anything, but you look at the wide variety from the Men in Black series. A long way from, you know, sci-fi was not really heavily delved into until the 50s in the movies, and really not in radio until the 50s then. I wonder if the Second War and the Great Bomb stimulated interest in science.
That and the Roswell incident, I think that started really getting people interested. And
you know,
of course,
that
a lot of the 50s sci-fi was kind of an end-of-the-world type stuff. So both in movies and in the radio.
And it started getting more, looking more realistically, where like we were going to get out into space in the 50s.
Right.
And lo and behold, as the one great president said, in this great decade of the 60s, decade he meant, of course, we would get on the moon, and we sure did.
Yeah, and there was no proof that they would be able to do that when he said it. They were not. I don't know that they were ready for that statement at that time, but they did it. They made it.
They did it.
Well, the Russians have beat us in so many things. First men into space and first satellite and things like that, that they had to really reach for something that they could get through before the Russians did.
Yeah. Gosh, my first aliens, the early impression of aliens for me was Invasion of the Saucer Men. Those big bulbous headed, take us to your leader type guys. And
yeah, I'm trying to think what mine was. Probably from aliens and stuff from cartoons. That would have been my.
Oh yeah,
my.
What was that one
first?
From wasn't there one called Asterisk or something like that? I don't know. Old cartoon.
Probably.
Marvin the Martian.
I think of Marvin Martian. I think is one that comes to mind certainly.
And you know how you mentioned that how this story kind of predated Planet of the Apes in real science.
Yes.
Here's a shocker. Go and if you get a chance, check out First Men in the Moon from 1964. Ray Harryhausen did the effects. Or at least some of them. But very interesting, the spacecraft that they had, very much like a space module. The movie was 1964. We didn't see a space module until maybe 68, 67, when Apollo really got going.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Well, even some of the original pictures from the original story had it as a space capsule and a two-person space capsule.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, the guy was amazing. And predicting. That's why I think he actually, I always wanted to write a story. It's called The Last Interview with Ben Franklin. And it's like Ben Franklin was, he didn't admit to this, but he was like a time traveler who got stuck in that time and just did what he did as inventions just to make his life more comfortable. And he kind of ponders then what happened to his friends, H.G. Wells and Jules Vernon. Whatever happened to them? Because, of course, he's way up ahead of them. He didn't know they went into the past and got stuck in their particular time, but they used it to write stories where he just used his knowledge to create a comfort for himself. That was just my idea on the story. I never sat down and actually wrote it, but...
Well, you should. That you got me on the hook now, damn it.
It'd be a short one. You know, we could do write that up and do it as a short little Erie House play.
Oh, why not?
Yeah.
We are planning on that. Someday, gang, we're gonna do an Eerie House production. With actual acting and everything.
And everything, yeah.
And it'll sound really, really, really good, much like where is it?
Sound really, really different. Yeah.
Yeah. Here, it'll be just
hey,
as good
we did
as
okay
this.
With the We did okay with our Uh-oh.
Are you lonesome tonight? Do you miss me tonight?
I hate me.
Are you sorry I split you apart? I know I am.
Does your memory stray to that dark, stormy day when I zapped you and made you my sweetheart?
That guy can carry a tune.
Does your wreck in your dungeon,
yeah, in a box anyway,
seem empty and bare? Do you gaze at your doorstep? See me flying there.
Blah, blah.
Is your heart filled with pain?
Shall I stab you again?
Carry me.
Are you lonesome
tonight? I wonder if you're lonesome tonight. That would be painful.
You know, someone once said that all the world's a stage.
And each must be a bat. I mean, must play a part.
Fate had me playing a monster with you as my sweetheart.
That one was when we met. I loved you at first stab.
You screamed your lines so cleverly and never missed a cue.
Then came Act Two. You seemed to change and you acted strange.
Why, you never did want to go to the blood bank, I'll never know.
But you lied when you said you loved me.
So I plucked out your eyes so you could see what you were saying.
But I'd rather go on hearing your lies.
Because I cut off your lips, too.
Then go on not living without you.
And now the stage is bare, and I'm standing there with blood on my hands.
And if you won't come back to me in pieces...
Then make them bring the coffin lid down.
Does the blood fill your veins?
Shall I bite you again?
Carry me here.
Are you lonesome
tonight?
Ooh, that's enough punishment.
Ooh.
My apologies. I'm so sorry. I hate me.
No.
I hate me more than ever.
I get a kick out of that. I get a kick out of those.
Those are fun. Those are so much fun to make, too. You have no idea, folks. We got fun, just enough time to squeak in.
Oh, sure.
X
good old
minus.
Bob, just tear the story apart before I write it. Thank you so much. anyway,
good
I'm sorry.
Point. Good point, Bob. The paradoxes of time travel. This one,
yes,
X minus one. Again, a title that has always been shouted at me. Drop dead.
True. But mostly by girls I ask out. That's for me, anyway.
Yeah. So, do we have any actors of note in this episode?
I think the date, I think there was pretty much the usual X minus one cast.
Fair enough.
I don't, yeah.
I'll bet we got a broadcast date, though.
I bet we do. It's here somewhere.
It's in there. It's got to dig a little.
Here we go. It is August 22nd. of 1957.
Walter O'Keefe!
This is Nightline, your tie line to the world, and this is Walter O'Keefe.
Walter!
Thanks, Walt.
Tonight, a visit to worlds strangely different from ours, the world of the future, the world of X minus one. Now, here is the future, X minus one.
Countdown for blast-off. X minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X minus 1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents Tonight, the Clifford D. Simak story, Drop Dead. But first, hear this.
Have you ever asked yourself what this country's most important natural resource is? I'm Dorothy Olsen, NBC Bandstand singing schoolteacher. Our most important resource? Well, you might consider it our mineral deposits, or our tremendous sources of water power, or maybe our great forests. Well, these are all very important natural resources, but there's one resource that's more important than all these combined, our children. Don't neglect them or their educational facilities. Poor schools breed inadequate citizens for tomorrow. And another thing, keep your youngsters in tip-top shape so that they won't miss important school days. Dress them against the weather so they won't catch needless winter colds. Check their wardrobe as they go back to school this fall to be sure that they have plenty of the right kind of clothing. Remember, our children are this nation's most important natural resource. It's your job to protect their future as they go back to school this fall.
Now, X minus one, and the story of an unbelievable planet. Listen to Drop Dead.
Exactly 1 hour and 20 minutes after we sent the survey ship out on its tail, the critters showed up. Ordinarily, when you make a landing on an unknown planet, it takes at least a week for any life to come creeping out of hiding and sneak a look. But there they were, the critters. They were almost cow-sized, but not as graceful as a cow. Their bodies were put together as if every blessed one of them had run full tilt into a wall. Their hides were splashed with large squares of pastel colors, the kind of color one never finds on any self-respecting animal. Violet, pink, orange, chartreuse. The overall effect was in a checkerboard, made by an old lady who did crazy quilts. Max Weber, our biologist, stood at the tail fin with me and stared.
Look at that on their heads. Those antlers.
Those are not antlers, my friend.
Well, I was afraid to say it. It looks like vegetation. As if they were trying to hide behind a skimpy thicket.
And what bothers me is the fruit and vegetables. That is fruit and vegetables growing on their heads.
Hey, watch it. One of them's broken away from the herd and coming over this way.
Step back. Give me a clear shot in case it charges.
Look, here it comes.
What? How do you like that?
It just dropped.
Dead.
That animal just walked up to us and dropped dead.
We left the critter lying where it fell and started to set up camp. Carl Parsons, our ecologist, had the stove together and the supper started before the last tent peg was driven. I dug out my diet kit and mixed up my formula, and all of them kidded me about it the way they always did. It didn't bother me. Their kidding was automatic, and I had automatic answers. I know ulcers must sound silly and archaic. You ask any medic, he'll tell you they don't happen anymore. But I have a riddled stomach and a special diet kit to prove that they sometimes do. After supper, Carl Parsons, the ecologist, Max and I, dragged the critter in and had a good look at it.
Hey, look at this, Ed. This animal's got different colored blocks on it, just like a checkerboard. Look at this one.
Holes.
Yeah. Just like one of those peg sets a kid uses toys. Here, look what I found out of that. I'll poke it with my knife. There.
Looks like a bee.
Well, it is. On top of being a tomato bush and a grapevine, this critter is a walking beehive.
Why couldn't they be something simple?
Yeah, it never is.
You know, this is a screwy place.
The critters?
No, not the critters. The planet itself. Never saw one like it. It's positively naked. No trees, no flowers, nothing. Almost as if someone had said, let's make a simple planet. Let's cut out all the frills. Let's skip all the biological experiments and just work on the basics. One form of life and the grass for it to eat.
We unshipped the experimental animals, the rats, the Zartils from Centauri and the Punkins from Polaris. The Punkins made an unholy racket because Punkins are always hungry. You just can't give them enough to eat. You turn them loose and they eat themselves to death. We got them all unshipped and set up under a shed in rows when Max walked up to me thoughtfully, chewing on a toothpick the way he always did.
Ed, there's something wrong.
Yeah, what do you mean?
There are no insects here. I wandered around, laid down in a dozen different places. Stands to reason a man should find some insects if he looked all morning. It is natural.
What about the bees?
What bees?
Well, the ones that were in the critter. Didn't you see any?
No, I didn't get close to any critter herds.
Birds?
Not a one. Oh, I was wrong about the flowers. The grass is tiny flowers.
For the bees to work on.
Hmm. Very neat, isn't it?
I'm not so sure.
American tradition. Now back to X-1 and the Clifford Simak story, Drop Dead.
The bio team had the critter spread out on a canvas tarp. They were happily chopping him up in small pieces with a scalpel.
Ed, I've got news for you. No brain.
What?
No brain. We can't find one, and there's no nervous system.
That's impossible. How can a highly organized, complex animal exist without a brain or nervous system?
It's got everything else. As near as we can figure it out, there are at least a dozen different kinds of flesh. Some fish, some fowl, some good red meat. Maybe even a little lizard.
Well, an all-purpose animal. We found something, finally.
If it's edible, and if it doesn't poison you, if it doesn't grow hair all over you.
Well, that's up to you, fellas. I'll get the cages down, and you can start killing off the little animals to your heart's content.
And there's only one insect, these bees. And we never see these unless we're near a critter herd. And no birds, no fish in the water, not even a single-cell paramecium.
Yeah, I was talking it over with Max.
You know, I'd give my right arm to hear a cricket or a mosquito or even a hornet.
This is the strangest thing we've... Hey, Max, what are you chewing?
Toothpick.
That's no toothpick. Spit it out.
Hmm?
That's grass.
I don't know. I must have just picked it automatically to chew on. Just a habit, I guess.
Yeah. Well, go on with the report.
Well, it's a walking filet mignon. That animal is an all-purpose for sure. It lays eggs, gives milk, and has six different kinds of red meat. Makes honey, two kinds of fowl, one of fish, and a whole lot of others we can't identify.
Then, of course, the bacteria.
And what about the bacteria?
The critters swarm with them, and all of them the same. You know, it normally takes 100 different kinds of bacteria to make the metabolism work. But here there's only one. It must do all the work of the 100 other species do. I wouldn't be surprised if that's the brains and the nervous system you couldn't find with your knife. The bacteria doubling in brass for both systems.
The whole place balances. Nature's never static, never standing still. But here on this planet, it's standing still. Where's the competition? Where's the evolution? It's as if long ago all these life forms said, let's quit this feuding, let's get together, let's cooperate. Symbiosis.
Well, we need another critter to work on.
I'll bet you we get it.
Luckily, Max didn't take Carl's bet. Right after breakfast, the critter came in and died with a savoir-faire that was positively marvelous. We unloaded all our supplies and got ready for a long stay. We were feeding all the experimental animals on a critter now. The carnivorous ones ate the critter meat, and the vegetarians chomped on critter fruit and critter vegetables. They all grew sleek and sassy. We were sitting around after supper one night when suddenly we heard something.
Hey!
What is it?
Listen!
Thunder!
Listen!
I think... All right, quick! Everybody up into the ship!
What is it?
A herd of critters. Look, you see the dust? They're coming this way in a stampede. We swarmed up the ladder and tumbled into the port. Below us, the stampede critters went grinding through camp. There seemed to be millions of them. They came pouring past for almost an hour. When it was all done, we came down and surveyed the damage.
Well, the animals are safe. They were under the tail fins.
Everything else is gone. Tents carried away.
Food supply is gone.
How about the emergency rations in the ship?
I had to move them down to the supply tent so they'd be handy. They're gone, dashed into the mud.
Well, even if we lifted ship immediately, it's at least 7 weeks to the nearest contact point. And no rations.
Well, gentlemen, I suggest you try on your bibs. There'll be steak for dinner.
Steak?
That's right. Steak or fowl or fish or honey, whichever you like.
You mean eat critter?
You got any other ideas?
Well, for one time. Ed, I wish I had your ulcers. You've got your diet kit in your pack, right?
Yeah.
Well, let's get a good fire going and throw on a chunk of critter.
Get that good critter.
Whenever I hear the word critter, I think of Beverly Hillbillies.
Yeah. That was fine dining.
Fine dining. Yep. Mine is fine dining.
Yep.
In that billiard room.
Hey, if there's nothing else, you have critter.
That's right. That's right.
Why not?
Just don't tell Ellie Mae. That's all.
Yeah. I don't remember too many movies or stories about people eating aliens. It's usually the other way around.
That's true, yeah. Because it all depends on, you never get to the point where they get starved enough.
Yep. Now, we've seen Tom Hanks eating weird stuff on an island, but...
Yeah. Yeah, but he was talking to a volleyball. What does he know?
Yeah, true. Beats being alone. Yes.
That's true.
So, let's wrap
interesting
up.
Tale going on. Interesting,
oh, yeah.
Tale going on.
What is up with these strange critters, too? They run up to you and then they drop dead. I'm done. The ultimate in resignation. I'm just going to die here.
Something like that. I was thinking a little Shop of Horrors there. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was an alien?
Yeah. Let's wrap this one up. We might have time for a little bonus material.
Woohoo!
Yep. As we wind down with the conclusion of Drop Dead from X Minus One.
The crew ate about a critter a day. They didn't seem to mind. Just at breakfast time, one would walk in and keel over. The crew ate like there was no tomorrow. I waited for them to break out in a rash or start turning green with purple spots or grow scales or something. But nothing happened. They felt better than they ever had. But then one morning, Max Weber turned up sick.
Well, gentlemen, I've just taken a sample of my own blood.
How do you feel?
Lousy. I'm loaded with bacteria, critter bacteria. I've checked some of the others. They've got a lower count than I have.
Well, that figures. You got a head start.
No.
The rest of them have just been eating critter for a week. Hey, remember the day you ran out of toothpicks and took to chewing on a grass stem?
Yeah. Well, we can't stop eating critter. It's all the food we have.
Well, we might stop eating critter now. And there's my diet kit. We might make it home.
Your diet kit wouldn't last us 3 days.
I took a blood sample on the test animals. They've got a bacteria count almost as high as mine.
Well, it doesn't make any difference. We still have to eat critter. We haven't got any choice.
That night, Weber disappeared. We hunted him for 3 days. He couldn't have gone very far, but we didn't find him. We did find one queer thing, though.
Hey, over here! Down in the gully!
And what is it?
That white fungus, kind of a ball. It wasn't here last week.
We couldn't find Weber. And then about 4 days later, Carl woke me up.
Ed, get up. Get up.
What's the matter?
The animals. The test animals. They're insisting. They're turning into cocoons or chrysalis or something.
What?
All of the test animals, the guinea pigs, the dogs, they're turning into white fungus balls.
Carl, the ball we found out in the field.
Weber. Max Weber. It's got to be.
We had some trouble finding the place because the land was so flat and featureless. We finally located it just as dusk was setting in.
It split.
It looks like an egg after a chicken's been hatched. Carl?
Well, what do you think?
Look inside. There are two halves of that cocoon.
Look at the marks.
You can see what it is now.
Ed, you're the only one who has a chance. I think you should leave right now. Get back to the center and tell them. You've got your diet kit. You can make it. No wonder there are just the critters here. Take one drink of water. Chew a single grass stem. Take one bite of critter. Do any one of those things and you turn into one of them. Listen, Ed. You take your diet kit and notes and get out of here.
But I can't run out on you.
Forget us. We're not human anymore. You must not stay. If you do, in a day or two, a critter will come in and drop dead for you. And you'll go crazy all the way back home, wondering which one of us it was.
I walked slowly over to the ship and I stood at the foot of the ladder, holding the notes and the diet kit against my chest. I thought of all the things we'd been through together. The crew, how they'd always kidded me about the diet kit. I thought of almost 10 years eating that awful goo, and that I could never eat like a normal human because of my ulcerated stomach. Maybe they were the lucky ones, I told myself. If a man got turned into a critter, he'd probably come out with a whole stomach and never worry about how much or what he ate. The critters never ate anything except the grass. But maybe, I thought, that grass tasted just as good to them as steak or a pumpkin pie would taste to me. So I stood there for a while and I thought about it.
Ed, what are you doing back here?
Carl, I just took that diet kit and threw it out into the waste disposal unit.
What are you talking about?
My friend, I am very hungry. What have you got for supper?
Fred Collins speaking. And I'll have another word for you about X-1 in a moment.
Hi, this is Walter O'Keefe. You know, they say there's nothing new under the sun, and maybe that's true. But there is something new under the moon, and that's Nightline. In Nightline, we think we've found the way to use the intimacy, as well as the lightning-fast maneuverability of radio, in an hour-and-a-half package of high-voltage, different entertainment. We found the way to make the airwaves your magic carpet to wherever big things are happening. Anywhere in the country, for that matter, anywhere in the world. Now, let's say that your favorite comedian is performing at a Las Vegas nightclub. He's packing them in, and you've really got to have connections to get a table. Well, Nightline is that connection, and your radio is your ringside table. More things than you'd believe are happening in the so-called still of the night, and Nightline is your line to exciting entertainment after dark. My feeling is Nightline marks a new era in nighttime entertainment. Tune us in every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and you'll hear what I mean.
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, which this month features Double Indemnity by Robert Sheckley. To commit the perfect crime, all Barthold needed was centuries in which to plan it and execute it, and an insurance policy with Double Indemnity. Galaxy Magazine, on your newsstand today. Tonight, X-1 has brought you Drop Dead, a story written by Clifford D. Simak and adapted for radio by Ernest Canoy. Featured in our cast were Lawson Zerbe as Ed, Ralph Camargo as Max Weber, and Joseph Bell as Carl Parsons. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by George Voutsas and is an NBC Voutsas Radio Network production.
Voutsas.
Our man, George.
You'll be on the right line to exciting entertainment when you hear Nightline tonight over most of these NBC stations.
There's those tones. All right, that wraps up. Drop Dead.
Detail, indeed. Yes. And we do even have a moral to go with that from Gar himself.
From the pen of the ghoul himself. Eerie House Radio proudly presents a Garless Gar's Moral of the Story, written by Gar, performed by Dave.
Dave. You are what you eat until you're a critter. There you go.
Yeah!
There you go.
There we go. And yet, we have some bonus time, do we not?
Yes. We Someone, like the guy from the company came over, you know, that Italian guy with the... came in to fill up the jukebox and the wheel.
Oh, okay. Yeah, wheel, yeah. Jukebox, yeah. Yep.
He's like a big thug. He comes in there and he brings his stuff, guys. Unbelievable.
Yeah, he says, sort play this or else, is what he
That's
says.
That's right.
Gotta be careful of that.
Yeah.
I don't trust that mustache.
So we're going to keep ourselves in line. Hopefully the 30-minute one won't come up.
Yeah, there's a couple big ones in there, but...
Yeah, that's a good one. All right, let's do the wheel. I guess it's my turn, isn't it, or is it yours?
It is your turn. It is your turn.
Pull the 30.
Around and around she goes, and where she stops, nobody knows.
Well, it seems that, you know, when you're a kid, you kind of idolize people like the Lone Ranger and Tonto. And as you go through life, you don't listen to the radio anymore. And you somehow figure they'll always be there, you know. And then one day you turn on the radio and you say, gee, I'd like to listen to Lone Ranger. It's been so long, you know, like 20 years. And he isn't around anymore.
It's true.
And you wonder what happened to the Lone Ranger and Tonto. And I did a little research. I went out west, and it's a terrible, terrible, sad story. I hate to tell it to you, but... And Lone Ranger's married.
Is he?
He married a girl he met at a Folks Over 28 dance in New York. And, you know, a girl being married to the Lone Ranger is kind of exciting in the beginning, you know, showbiz. Just imagine a girl married to the Lone Ranger, and she goes to a department store to apply for a credit plate. And the credit manager says, what does your husband do, madam? She says, he's the Lone Ranger. Get out of here. Well, I've been married, 15 years, and he hasn't had a gig in all that time. And he kind of wanders around the house with, you know, the gun belt without any bullets because they sold all the bullets.
What a picture.
And the wife got herself a little job in one of the local bistros as a girl on the velvet swing.
And, oh, yes.
Well, once you get showbiz in your blood, you know how it is. And he just wanders around the house waiting for the phone to ring. And she's kind of had it, you know.
Uh-huh.
And as the scene opens, we find... first of all, they live in this big housing project. And no one in the building knows who the Lone Ranger is. The mailbox simply reads, Mr. and Mrs. L. Ranger. And she's about to leave for work, and she's kind of giving him an ultimatum. Lonnie?
Is that his name?
Yes, Lonnie is his name. I've had it, she says. I want you to go out and get a job. Now, the parade's passed you by. Forget about this Lone Ranger business. Swallow your pride, Lonnie. Look at the doorman. Used to be Captain Marvel. Another thing, I don't want that Indian in the living room anymore. She leaves. The Lone Ranger now has the sad task of telling Tonto that they have come to the end of the trail. Tonto's in the bathroom rinsing out some wash-and-wear masks. And the Lone Ranger says, Tonto, how many times have I told you? I want to do it myself. Oh, this headache. I'm sorry, Tonto. Gee, she's been on my back again, you know. Tom, there's something I have to tell you. I don't know how to tell you this, old fellow, but, well, I'm getting kind of old and tired, and I want to kind of settle down. What I'm trying to say, Tonto, is, have you ever thought of doing a single? I mean, you don't have to quit showbiz. Why don't you become a comedian? They don't have any Indian comedians.
Never thought of that.
Well, whatever you do, I want you to have this watch for all your years of faithful service. Read the inscription. Mickey Mouse. No, the other side, Tonto. Well, I guess that's it, old fellow. Tonto says, before me go, something me tell you, something you never know. Tonto, not man's name. Tonto mean Betsy. Betsy. Guy, you put me on. Come on, Tonto, you better pack. She'll be home soon. I don't want any trouble. Tonto, not man. Tonto, not man. You don't have to talk that way when we're alone. Come on now, Tonto. Me. Your mother. My mother. Oh, are you out of it? Wait a minute. The braids, the leather skirt. I can't remember a day or night without Tonto. You're always there. You are my mother. Mom. Mommy. Tonto, Mama. Gee, I'll have to get used to it. Tell me, Mother. Tonto. What does Kemosabe mean? Kemosabe, your name? Sonny Boy.
Never knew that. I never, ever knew.
See, this show is so educational.
Yep.
And the Tonto met Betsy. Yeah.
Who knew? Who knew?
Jackie Vernon knew, I guess.
Yeah.
Smart guy. Smart guy. So what's happening on Erie House Radio tomorrow, Dale?
Nothing, I quit.
Oh, okay.
No. We got more space creatures with a tale from, oddly, Murder at Midnight and X-1.
Yes. The X-1 tale about a space creature. Woohoo!
Yep. And that's tomorrow at 6:30 Eastern, right afterwards. In one way, shape, or form or another, I bet you're going to get to see Gar, Potable Horror, starring Garla Gould. That'll be at 8 o'clock on them Twitches. I know he's still wrangling with his cable company, so it might be another repeat of a classic Gar show.
Yeah, until he gets that straightened out. And I noticed last week there were quite a few times where it was given the buffering circles on mine, and I know he was getting at least that on his end. So, yeah, he doesn't want it buffering when he goes live again.
And I don't think we mention enough, at least that's my opinion. Dave, this isn't all he does. It's not the Erie House 24/7 thing. Oh, no, siree, Bob, Jim Maroney. Dave does Weirdness Really Bad Movie, Spaceship One, and so many other products. Dave, where can folks see your hosted shows like Spaceship One and Weirdness Really Bad Movie? There's a bunch of places.
Yeah, there are. One place you can watch, if you have Roku, you have Uncle Pete's Betamax channel. So we've got 19 of our shows up there, along with a lot of other horror hosts. Vortex, just last Tuesday, we were on there on a Tuesday night at 9. So it'll be another couple weeks before we're back on the Vortex. You could actually also on Roku or online at WCTV On Demand. You could watch some Weirdness Really Bad Movie. And on the Bat TV, online, you could watch us there as well.
There you go. He's everywhere. You've even got episodes up on Internet Archive as well.
Internet Archive and on the Weirdness Really Bad Movie.com page and all kinds of fun stuff.
Yep, and this timer is way, way, way off, so I'm going to try to time this as best as we can, folks. As we say goodnight, I ask you to join us tomorrow night for more Space Creatures right here, House Radio.
The castle lights are growing dim.
See how I do.
There's no one left but me and him. When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
Can you dig it?
I'll be darned. Just a couple seconds off there.
Yeah. Yep, you can't go by my timer because my timer is even off more than yours was. So, but there it is.
It says it's recording. Looks dim.
Another
though.
One down the, another one down the can. I mean, another one in the can.
Or down the can. Let's see. There goes Erie House show number 600, what is it, 24 or something? I think so.
Yep, 624, exactly. Very good. Very good, you see.
Yep. It's actually, it's Erie House Oldie Tiny number 296. So it'll be 300 soon. In 4 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah. Since we had a night dedicated, since we first had a night completely dedicated to only old-time radio.
Wow. Amazing stuff. Amazing.
Yeah.
And how many programs we've shared throughout the years, just another amazing thing. We, I guess I got to get a couple caught up here, but we have well over 1,100 shows that we've shared so far, complete shows, not to mention, but I will, over 630 clips.
And that from, does that include single songs or when we do
that
clips?
Includes, that, yes, that includes the songs and the and the other clips.
Quite a body of work, eh?
It does not include the Erie House specials that we put together, the songs and the Dave facts, you know, those things that are not included in those numbers.
Yes. For those of you that are keeping score, and you should. We don't want to get audited, you know.
Yeah.
Our host society might audit us, and then, oh, God, we're in trouble.
That's
can't piece
okay.
those audits.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, had an altercation. Joe couldn't stand it. He had to go upstairs and see his mother, you know, my wife, Mrs. K.
Oh, yeah?
Couldn't stand it. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Well, he knew the dog was outside. Well,
okay.
The cat didn't want to go back downstairs, and the dog wanted to come in. So I'm like, well, this is going to fix itself.
Yeah?
Joe is not terrified. He's not even in his normal space on the love seat down here. Normally, he's cowering and hiding somewhere. I thought he was trying to be brave and come up here and face the dog and learn how to live a real life, but no. Joe is a complete wuss. I can do a lot of it, seems. A total gutless coward of a cat. Shameful.
Yeah.
Shameful.
Not all cats are curious enough.
Yeah. Well, I blame the dog. He spazzed.
And speaking of that, I think I need to take care of my little kitty. So if you don't mind, perhaps we shall bring in the one and only Mr. James Durante.
Good night. It's time to say good night. What more is this say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Sorry, for what we the say, and
inka-tinka-doo.
Good night. Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.